is, you have any individual questions that you would like to ask Mrs. Madison, you could come into my office where Mrs. Madison will be sitting, and if you have any individual questions, you can ask her. Okay? So without further ado, I want to introduce to you the woman who has written three books now.
Actually, four.
Oh, you gave me a fourth one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Four books now, and I have no doubt that after you hear Mrs. Madison speak, you will want to buy all every one of the four books. Mrs. Madison.
Okay. My fourth book will be available also in her office afterwards, if anyone wants it. It's called Choosing to Love. I was asked to speak to you right now on the topic of my second book, Outside Inside. And the subtitle of that book is A Fresh Look at SNEUT. But I have to tell you, I have given this whole talk without ever once using the word SNEUT, because I don't have to. I can just say I'm talking about self-image, because that's all I'm talking about, and I could talk to non-Jews about it. The problem is that SNEUT has gotten a kind of a bad rap in certain quarters in the religious world. Like, if you stop a 15-year-old girl on the street, even in Jerusalem, and ask her, what is SNEUT? She will probably say, SNEUT is a longer and longer list of things my school principal won't let me wear for the purpose of turning me into some kind of a frum cow and making sure that no boy ever looks at me twice. Now, it's not as bad in your school, okay? But still, girls feel it to be repressive, they feel it to be restricting, why can't I just wear what I want? I'm not going to be talking about SNEUT from this perspective of inches, centimeters, how much you cover this, whatever. I want to get at the meat of like what's going on underneath somebody that would even make them want to consider how they present themselves to the world. And here's the analogy I want to use. I have a box sitting on the shelf in my living room that I bought in Moscow. And it's a beautiful, painted up, ornate, decorative, lacquered, shiny little box. And you know, when I bought that box, I didn't buy it thinking I need something to put, you know, earrings in. I just bought it because it's a beautiful box, and it's sitting on the shelf, and it's empty. And that's fine, because the purpose of it is not what it contains, it's the box. You understand what I'm saying? I'm thinking about another kind of box now, which unfortunately I don't own, but that's called a pearl box. A pearl box is no less beautiful than one of these painted-up Russian boxes. It's even more beautiful, in my opinion. But it has elegant lines, it's usually a solid color, a very beautiful, shimmery, silvery color. It's kind of a quiet, understated beauty. And because the box is so simple and not eye-catching and not painted up and not over-decorated, when you look at it, immediately you understand there must be something precious inside to have such an elegant box. And sure enough, you open it up, and inside, nestled in the velvet, is this precious pearl. I look at those two kinds of boxes as two different ways that we can look at our bodies. There's some of us who see our bodies as little Russian boxes, and we should paint them up and make them ornate and eye-catching and decorated and shiny. And the problem with that is that even though you might end up looking very beautiful, kind of like the cover of a magazine kind of beauty, it sends out a message that the purpose is my outside, not what I have inside. The pearl box, on the other hand, sends a completely different message, that my beauty is of a quieter sort, and maybe it's because I want you to open up and see what's inside. These are two different ways we can look at the connection between the body and the soul. Either that my body is just lives for itself, or my body is a container for something that's even more beautiful, which is who I really am. The Torah teaches us that when Adam and Eve were first in the Garden of Eden, they had the ability to look right through a person's box into their contents. They could look right through the body and see the soul, the inner beauty of a person. But we made a terrible mistake, and we lost that vision, and now we're stuck on superficiality. I'll tell you, ladies, I don't know if you girls realize this, but if you're ever walking down a street and a guy notices you, he will not be thinking, wow, what a soul. You understand? That's what he will not be thinking, because we can't see it anymore. And the Torah teaches us that when we recognize we couldn't see the whole person anymore, that we ran to cover ourselves, which raises a really interesting question. What is clothing about? Why do we care so much about it? Even the most primitive cultures on earth still wear something, even though it's hot. Why? So I think we can see by looking at the ages that we expect children to wear, or adults to wear different amounts of clothing. Take a newborn baby. Is anybody embarrassed by a newborn baby's little bottom? nose, adorable. If you're a mother, you just kind of go, mmm, cute, right? Okay? Ask your own mothers, I'm not the only one, okay? But as that baby matures, it becomes less and less appropriate to display that sweet little bottom publicly. And by the time you reach adulthood, it's actually called a crime and you can be arrested, okay? Why are we so strict about covering the body for an adult, and for a baby, it's like totally adorable when they're naked? And I think the answer has to do with how much the soul of a person is active within their body. Or to put it another way, how much we know they're more than what we think they are. Take a baby. Does a baby have a soul? Yes. Is that soul active yet? No. The main power of the soul is to be able to care about other people, to put other people ahead of you in life, to be selfless. A baby is totally selfish. All it knows is its own wants, its own needs. Take care of me, feed me. I don't know how much little sleep you got last night, Mom. I don't care. You don't even exist. The world's about me. That's called a baby. And there are some 20 and 30 and 40 year old babies walking around the world, unfortunately. Okay, that's called a baby. But as a baby grows and matures, it learns that there's other children in the world. I have to share my toys. I have to let my mommy sleep. And by the time you reach adulthood, you can even give up your life for somebody if you're a very developed soul. In a minute, I want to tell you about someone who did that. And as we mature and that soul comes out more and more, we expect people to wear more clothing. So what is clothing really saying? Clothing is saying, I don't want to be confused with something that's only physical. I don't want to be seen superficially. Maybe if I put something on, I will distract your attention away from some of my skin, and I'll challenge you to focus on who I really am inside. Clothing says, I am more than what meets the eye. If you want to see the real me, you have to look deeper. I know of somebody, I never got to meet her personally, unfortunately, because she was killed before I got to meet her, but I know somebody who possessed this depth. You won't know her name, but you may know the town in Israel that she's from. Her name was Ela Abukasis, and she was from Sderot. Have you heard of Sderot? Yeah. Sderot is a beautiful little town bordering the Gaza village that unfortunately used to be under constant Qassam rocket bombardment from Gaza. And the way life worked in Sderot was that when a rocket was launched from the Gaza Strip and it was detected by the Israelis, you had 15 seconds to get to shelter, which is not a heck of a lot of time to get anywhere. Ela was walking home from Shul one Saturday night with her 11-year-old brother. She was 17 years old at the time. And the alarm went off. And I'm just imagining her as the seconds ticked away, 14, 13, 12, looking around frantically for a public bomb shelter, not seeing one. 11, 10, 9, 8, looking for a piece of concrete to huddle under, not seeing anything. 7, 6, 5, and she must have heard the whistle of the rocket getting louder and louder. And in those last couple of fatal seconds, when she knew the rocket was going to hit very close to where she was, rather than run for her life, she threw herself on top of her brother. She shielded him with her body. She was killed, and he was unharmed. Would you agree that's a real soul?
Yeah.
Now let me ask you something. Let's suppose for a moment she weren't killed. Let's imagine that the next day in the Prime Minister's lawn outside the Knesset in Israel. They're going to have a huge award ceremony for her, for being such a hero, for being willing to sacrifice her life to save her brother. And they sit at the podium and loudspeakers, and all the members of the Knesset are there, and Ela walks down the central aisle up to that podium amidst thunderous applause to receive her award for heroism. What would she be wearing? Let's suppose it was July instead of January. July is very hot in Israel. Would she go up there to the podium wearing shorts and a tank top? No. Would she go up there wearing, say, maybe a skirt that maybe comes down somewhere around her knees and a shirt that are all completely form-fitting and clingy and sexy? No. She'd probably look like the way she did in the pictures I saw her in the building built in her memory. A happy, healthy, wholesome girl wearing nice clothes, not tight, not baggy either, nice, pretty. okay? Looking like she didn't have anything to prove to anybody, just looking nice. Why? Because in a moment when you're being acclaimed for your soul, why would you present yourself as a body? Imagine, Ela Abukasis, a hero who saved your brother's life, and you're showing off cleavage? It kind of doesn't go, don't you agree? And you can do that in the Emmy and the Grammy Awards, because those singers and actresses don't make it on their talents alone, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. A big part of the success is their look, so they go up there and they receive the award showing cleavage. That cleavage is what got them to where they are today. But you're being acclaimed for saving your brother's life, acclaimed for a soul, and you're going to show off your body? Uh-uh. You'll agree with me on this? Okay, so here's the hard leap that's very difficult to make in the world that we live in. It's the leap we have to make. Every moment that we walk this earth, we are being acclaimed for our souls. We've just been trained not to think of ourselves that way because we live in a body-obsessed culture. I got an email from a girl a little bit older than you asking if she should have implants because she doesn't think that she's busty enough. Base Yaakov girl. Okay? We are a body-obsessed culture. And so it's difficult for us to realize that maybe we're losing something by all of this revelation. And maybe what we're losing is being in touch sometimes with our own souls. Let me tell you a story from my book, Outside Inside. And then I'll tell you what this problem, this kind of confusion about who am I, body or soul, what it looks like in our world. So I tell a story about a girl who I call Judy, who's, you know, observant. And she visits her friend Laura. And Laura has a job interview the next morning. Laura is not observant. And Laura's going through all the clothes in her closet to try and figure out what she should wear to make the best impression. So Judy pulls a miniskirt and a matching, like, it's called a chutzat beten in Hebrew. What do you call it? A crop top. Thank you. Off the hanger and says, hey, why don't you wear this to the interview? So Laura says, are you crazy? Like, you know, I'm a lawyer. What female lawyer would go to work looking like this? What do you think I want to be looked at as? I want to be taken seriously. I want to be appreciated for who I am. So Judy says to her, oh, then why is it that when you go out to a party on a Saturday night hoping to meet some guy with whom you can have a real relationship, someone who'll take you seriously, someone who'll appreciate you for who you are, how come this is what you wear? Do you see the confusion? Laura certainly knows who she is, but she thinks that in order to get a guy, I gotta really dress down. And so what happens is that you attract guys based upon your outside, and you can start davening that maybe they'll come to like you for who you are on the inside. And maybe they will, and maybe they won't. It's not what you were advertising. You know what I mean? What does this look like in the religious world? I'll tell you what it looks like in my neighborhood in Jerusalem. Okay? I live in like what's called a Haredi neighborhood, Har Noth. It's not all Haredi, but the part that I live is. It's a little bit mixed, but mostly Haredi. Friday night after dinner, people like to take walks in the streets because the streets are all closed off. Okay, so among the people taking walks on Friday night are groups of religious boys taking a little stroll together, just presumably to get some fresh air after dinner. And they have groups of religious girls taking a stroll together, presumably just to get some fresh air. Now down at the bottom of the hill, where the kids are not Haredi, you have a whole mixed social scene. You know, but at the top of the hill, the boys and girls don't really hang out so much. So after Friday night dinner, they take these walks. And what's the purpose of these walks, of course? I don't want to shock anybody to tell you what they're actually doing on these walks. Hold on to your seats. You ready? They're noticing each other. Ooh, this is called Haredi flirtation. They're noticing each other. They're just kind of walking down the street, and the boys are kind of quietly checking out the girls, and the girls are kind of quietly checking out the boys. And some of these kids are like of marriageable age, and they know if a boy notices me and he thinks I'm pretty, maybe he'll ask who I am, and maybe somebody will set us up. And so you like to look really good for these notice and be noticed walks, right? So I noticed something interesting. I noticed that a lovely religious girl will come to my house for Shabbat, looking beautiful on Shabbat stick and sneer stick and the whole works. But sometimes they like to change into things they feel they look better in before they take these walks. And sometimes they change into sweaters that look like they've shrunk three sizes in the laundry. Now let me ask you something. Isn't this the exact same thing as Laura putting on something really skimpy to go to a club? a religious girl putting on a really tight sweater to go out to have religious boys look at her. Do you see what I'm trying to say? Now, don't get me wrong, this girl's covered. You know, she's got it up to here, here, the whole works, but it's all tight and provocative and sexy. And, you know, they have a name for these girls in London. You know what they call them? They call such a girl wearing the religious provocative look? They call her a hot honey. She's a hot honey. So I was speaking at Beis Yaakov of Baltimore, and this girl asked me, how come the focus is, with Sneas is always on girls? How come there's no such thing as like a hot baruch? So I looked it up, and I actually did not find anywhere on the internet the term hot baruch. But I did come across an interesting term for the kind of guy who checks out the hot honeys. And you know what they call him? A slimy shmooly. Okay? Which leaves us with a really big, and honestly, a very serious question. Do I want to be a hot honey who gets checked out by slimy shmoolies? Do you know what I mean? And here's where girls make a terrible mistake, because they're afraid of losing attention. The question is, what kind of attention and from whom? I had a friend who was working in a restaurant, and it was a treif restaurant, and she wasn't religious, and most of the people there weren't Jewish. And she started learning about Judaism, and she heard about Sneas, and she thought, you know, I think I'd like to dress in a little bit, a way that kind of makes me a more internally defined person. So she starts coming to work in skirts and longer sleeves, higher necklines, less tight. And meanwhile, the guys in the restaurant kind of don't know what to make about this transformation. Like, this is not the way any of the other waitresses look. They're all like this, and she's coming in like this, and they like, what planet is she from? You know what I mean? So they kind of started talking to her less and being kind of more formal and hello, how are you, and goodbye, have a nice day. But they weren't flirting with her anymore like they were flirting with all the other waitresses. So she eventually quit work there, also because it was a treif restaurant. She's becoming a little more into Judaism. And 6 weeks after she left, one of the waitresses called her up and said, you know, I don't get it. You saw how all the guys in the restaurant were always talking to us, always flirting with us, and you they ignored? Well, I want you to know that 7 guys came up to me after you left and said to me, but she's the kind of girl we want to marry. Let me tell you something about boys. And I've got this right from the horse's mouth, as it were. Boys have told me this straight out. Boys are under the impression that there are 2 kinds of girls. There are quality girls and not quality girls. And the not quality girls are the ones that you want to have fun with in high school. And the quality girls are the girls you want to marry. Their mistake is that every girl is a quality girl. But some girls don't show it. And they get attention from the slimy shmoolies. And they can be really slimy. And the other girls are still getting attention, but it's of a quieter sort and from a different kind of guy. It's not the ego gratifying type where they're all whistling at you or calling to you or saying hi or wanting to talk to you or who is she? A different kind. The kind that I think deep down we want. I was once interviewed for a BBC radio program, and they got to the question, I was like representing Orthodox Jewish women. So they asked me all these questions, and they finally got to the modesty question. And they said to me, why do you cover yourself up so much? And I looked at the guy who was interviewing me, and I said, because I don't want to be invisible. And he said, wait a second, that's backwards. When you cover yourself up, you make yourself invisible. People don't notice you as much. Don't you want to be noticed? And I said, I actually look at the other way around. If I were to cover myself less, I think my physical self would be very visible, but the real me might get lost in the picture. When I dress like this, I, the real me, feel very visible. You know, we women, we all think we want to be noticed all the time. If you look deeply into yourself, I think that you'll discover you don't really want to just be noticed. You want to be seen. Not noticed for what you have, but seen for who you are. And I want to tell you the story of somebody who I think, and I'll conclude with this and maybe we'll have time for questions. I want to tell you the story of somebody who I think really knew what it was to be seen and really understood what Sneas was, and I don't even know what she dressed like. I just know who she was. Ilana Rosenblatt was an 18-year-old girl on seminary in Israel. I met her. She's very cute, kind of pretty. But what made her beautiful is that she really glowed. She was so good and so sweet, and she kind of shone. It made her a really beautiful girl. She met a great guy. They got married, moved to London, had four kids. And after her fourth child was born, she just discovered a lump, a large lump. And the doctors gave her a very poor prognosis. She didn't have long to live. And she and her husband immediately made a decision. Immediately they said, this is not going to ruin our lives. This is not going to depress us and get us angry at God. We're going to use this to grow. And they worked on gratitude and appreciation and drawing closer to God. And meanwhile, she had surgery and chemotherapy, and then it went to remission, and she had more chemotherapy. And tragically, a couple of years later, she died. 3 days before she died, she was on oxygen because she could hardly breathe, hardly get out a sentence. And her husband asked her, how are you feeling? And you know what Ilana said? She said, I wouldn't trade places with anyone. How does somebody who is dying imminently of cancer say, I wouldn't trade places with anyone? Because her body had failed her, and she identified herself at that point in her life almost entirely as a soul. She was probably missing a body part. She was emaciated, skeletal, you know. She was no longer identifying herself physical. She identified herself completely as a soul. And you know what the purpose of a soul is? To grow. And she felt that she had grown so much in this experience that if that's who she was, she wouldn't trade places with anybody. Pretty high level. I don't know if I could ever say that, but that's what she said. How likely is it that Ilana Rosenblatt would want to be called a hot honey? How likely is it that she'd feel pained at not being noticed and would be tempted to wear lower cut shirts to get her the attention that she wants? How likely is it, just to think of some other Orthodox women I heard about, that she'd throw up her dinner because her husband likes her thin? Or want to get cosmetic surgery? You understand what I'm trying to say? We live in a really difficult world. And we are really challenged. I think being beautiful in today's world is a challenge. I think it's easier for a girl, you know. Everyone always wants to be beautiful. We're always envious of the girls we think are more beautiful than us. I don't envy beautiful girls anymore because I think it's so challenging in this world. And beautiful women themselves tell me, I don't even know if I'm being loved for who I am. I don't know if a man just wants something from me. I can't trust people. You know, it's difficult. But we're supposed to be beautiful. And Judaism praises beautiful women. So I think the challenge is, how can I be as beautiful as I'm capable of being, given what God gave me, and still make the statement that I don't identify with my outside, that I want to look beautiful, because I deserve to look beautiful because of who I am inside. And that kind of beauty, when you know who you are, and you project it outwards, through looking beautiful and well put together and whatever else, that I think is real Jewish beauty, and that's what I think tznius is. Tznius doesn't mean looking nebby and frumpy and dumpy. It means looking beautiful in a more compelling way that says, I want to be seen for the whole of me, outside and inside. Let me stop and I'll take any questions that you might have. Anybody want to ask anything? Yes?
All your books talk about tznius?
No. Outside, Inside, my second book, talks about tznius, and my latest book, which I have with me, called Choosing to Love, also has three chapters on different aspects of tznius. One just tznius, one on the influence of the media on tznius, and one on eating disorders in tznius. And I honestly think that it's impossible to have a healthy relationship with yourself or with somebody else without tznius consciousness, even if you don't use that word. Even if you're not Jewish and you never heard the word tznius before, the non-Jews out there, or the not religious Jews who have good, loving, healthy relationships are those who have tznius internally, even if they're not dressing the part completely. And maybe I try and illustrate that. Imagine two little twins who were separated at birth, And this one's adopted by a family in LA. And from the time she's young, she's in TV commercials and she's doing modeling and she becomes a cheerleader and everything's physical, physical, physical. Okay? When she looks for a boyfriend, she's going to look for a guy who's going to appreciate in her exactly what she's always been taught to appreciate in herself. She knows what she's worth, and she'll look for a guy who appreciates that in her. And she'll probably end up as someone's trophy wife. Do you know what a trophy wife is? Yeah, sure. Those gorgeous women that a guy can walk around with in his arm, and everyone can look at him and think, wow, what a man, if he has such a beautiful woman. And he can, his ego can be inflated. That's called a trophy wife. Now imagine this identical, this girl's identical twin sister, just as cute, just as pretty, and she goes into a family where they want to develop the whole person. They care about who she is inside. And from the time she's little, her mother will say things to her like, you look so lovely today, must be because of all the good deeds you've done. And she gets the impression that what actually makes me beautiful is who I am. When this little girl reaches the age at which she wants a boyfriend, she's going to look for a very different kind of boy. A boy who appreciates her for what she appreciates herself for. And is going to end up with a very different relationship. A real one. Can you see that? Any other questions? Yes?
So I understand about like covering yourself more like to show inner beauty, but why are there certain points in your body that you have to cover?
Why specifically certain places?
Yeah.
Well, some of them are erotic, which is kind of obvious, the more private places. But why elbows, knees, that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
I'm just taking a stab at this. It seems to me that what evolved as modest dress in Judaism came about because you're covering most of your body, but it still allows you freedom of movement and freedom of expression. For example, we don't cover our faces like the Taliban women do with those burqas. Why? Because we're supposed to be modest, but we're not supposed to hide our souls from the world. We're not supposed to be invisible. We're not supposed to not have a presence. I can't communicate with people. I can't have an impact on the world if people can't see my face. You know what I mean? So the idea of covering down to here and down to here and your whole torso and you know, not your face. I can walk freely. I can interact with people freely. People can see me. I can converse. But I'm de-emphasizing my body while not making myself totally invisible and depersonalized. Okay? I think it's striking a balance between body and soul. It's actually very healthy. Yes?
Why should a woman be allowed to wear pants? Because it covers their whole leg anyway.
Right. There's an idea that legs are a little bit more erotic than, say, upper arms. Thighs are more, maybe because of where they lead, but thighs are more erotic than an upper arm. And so therefore, when they're covered, they're supposed to be covered in a way that disguises their shape as well. I can wear a sleeve that's like, you know, pretty tight. You can see the shape of my upper arm here. I don't think it's going to do anything to anybody. And it's not going to make me see myself more superficially if I do that. Thighs is different. Pants, even baggy pants, still outline the crotch. You see someone's rear end more. Things are a little bit more outlined. Now, if you ask me what's better, really baggy pants or a really tight skirt, I might say the baggy pants. But fortunately, we have an option, okay, in which you can cover yourself and it also doesn't have to be tight. Yeah.
I don't know if this is true or not, but like, even if we're wearing like the appropriate shiny stuff, guys like still in their minds, they're still gonna think and everything, even if they can't see us.
Some will, because there's some people like that out there. But you'd be surprised how many people will not look at a girl or think of a girl inappropriately unless she's giving off a mixed message. Now, I actually got a phone call from a religious girl in Jerusalem. Who told me, she goes to one of the most right-wing schools. And if you know what Jerusalem is like, I'm talking about mid-calf pleated skirts, beige stockings, buttoned-up shirts, hair back in a ponytail, no makeup. You know what I mean? And she told me that she's in an inappropriate relationship with a bus driver who happens to be married. Okay? And it hasn't gotten so physical, but there's definitely been intimations that it could be going in that direction. In the meantime, they're spending a lot of time alone together. So I said to her, of all the women who board a bus in Jerusalem, why would a bus driver start up with you? You know, and that is a nebby look. What can I say? It is. You know what I mean? I mean, start up with a girl wearing half-dressed. Why would it start up with a girl looking like, you know, from a Beis Yaakov Jerusalem school? And she said to me, I just kind of exude this sexuality.
She what? What does that mean?
She exudes. She kind of just gives it off. What she was saying is that I'm religious and I have the uniform on, but beneath that uniform, I'm not really so internally religious. And the bus driver picked up on those vibes that said loud and clear, I might look like a Beis Yaakov girl, but I might be willing to play. And men have antennas for these double messages, you should know. Antennas. He picked right up on it, and he started up with her, and you know, he was right. Okay? So I just want to point out that sometimes guys start up with us because we could be giving off a vibe that's different than what we think we're giving off. And sometimes it's just because the guy's a sicko. Okay? Yes?
I feel like whenever we talk about this, like, it kind of goes to the point that, like, it's not really okay to, like, talk to boys, but, like, because you're saying that, like, and a lot of other people, like, teachers always tell us that boys aren't thinking what we're thinking and all that stuff, but then, like, what if most of your friends are boys? Like, it's kind of an awkward situation, because that's not, like, I don't believe that.
So let me tell you something. David Orlovsky, you know him? Has he been here? So David Orlovsky once said, he was speaking to a bunch of boys. He said, isn't it interesting, boys, how you very often choose to be friends with girls who also happen to be cute? And all the boys kind of went, okay? Boys are boys and girls are girls, and we're attracted to one another. And you can just be friends with a boy. But unless when he looks at you, he wants to stick his head down the toilet and throw up, there's always a reasonable chance that he could actually think of you in a way differently than what you think. And you have to be aware of that. You're a cute girl. There's no reason why a boy can't look at you differently than what you think he's looking at you as. And when boys mature, again, they start looking for deeper qualities in girls. It's true. But when a boy is 13 or 14 or 15, it is very much true that they're very visual, their brains are wired that way, and they're not really into deep connected relationships at that age. It's just a fact. Yes?
I don't know. I don't know. I'm kind of getting the message. I'm not so kind or anything. Like, that people that are not Shnias, like, they don't, like, still, like, don't have, like, that for soul or anything. And, like, I know people that aren't, like, they're not, like, super Shnias and everything, but they still have a good soul.
All of us have beautiful souls. The problem is that when a girl presents herself very physically, she begins to see herself more physically, and that inside part begins to wither. Do you know what I mean? If you, every time you walk down the street, you're turning a lot of heads and getting a lot of attention, you begin to put more and more importance on being able to do that because it feels good. It's flattering, frankly. I remember I was friends with a girl in high school. Her name was Lisa. And Lisa was very pretty. And before high school, we had been really good friends. And I remember the day that I realized I could no longer be friends with Lisa. We were sitting in a class, and there was a homely girl there, a girl who was really kind of funny and not very attractive looking, you know what I mean, funny looking. And people used to tease her, because kids can be cruel. And Lisa looked in her direction and said something, which I didn't hear, and then laughed. And when she laughed, she tossed her head of blonde curls, and all the boys looked at her because she was so attractive, tossing her blonde curls and laughing. And at that moment, I thought, Lisa has gotten so much into her external self that she'd rather have boys' attention than not hurt this girl's feelings. And then that was the end of our friendship. And unfortunately, this happens. Girls who really were deep, had a lot of stuff going for themselves, they can become more superficial and more into getting attention. Eating disorders can develop sometimes. We have to protect ourselves. We have to protect our inner selves, and we have to know that we want to get attention from people who are looking for the quality that we really have. Any other questions? Yes?
Is it wrong to want, let's say, for your husband even, among the other things, a hot guy?
Is it wrong to want a hot guy in your husband? Okay, can I change the language a little bit?
Sure.
It is not wrong to want to marry a man that you're very attracted to. You have to be attracted to your husband. But the kind of attraction that will last and become more and more powerful with the years and as you age, instead of fading with the years, is the kind of attraction that's based on inside and outside together. Okay? If you're going for looks, I got news for you. Looks go to pot. You're all at the peak right now. You got another couple of years and it's downhill. Serious. 18, it's just like, whoop, over the peak, down. Any other questions? Yes?
Okay, so you have to cover your elbows. But nothing's really attractive about your elbows.
Why do you have to cover your elbows if nothing's attractive about your elbows? There are different opinions about if you have to cover your elbows or not. But let's go by the opinion that says that you do. Again, I don't think it's about being attractive. For example, it's just about showing off more of your physical self as opposed to your spiritual self. Suppose I'm an 80-year-old woman, okay? And I have this big, dangly, like, stuff, you know what I mean? None of there, you know what I mean? Okay? Now, I might be less attractive in a sleeveless shirt than I am in a three-quarter length shirt because this stuff is not, like, so gorgeous, you know what I mean? But I cover it because I don't want to be seen physically, attractive or not attractive. Okay, attraction is part of it, but I just don't want to be seen physically at all. I want to be seen more spiritually. Okay? And same with elbows. Any other questions? I want to point out to you, by the way, that not only because I'm religious do I have this bias towards this other kind of deeper beauty that accompanies tzniyas. I was once speaking to some girls from California who were wearing next to nothing and about tzniyas, and they got it. And at the end of the talk, one of the girls said to me, you know, the other day we were all invited to an Orthodox wedding, so we put on, like, out of respect for the wedding party, we put on modest clothing, skirts, long sleeves, not tight, the whole works. And she said, and I took a photograph of our whole program there at the wedding. And this girl says to me, I don't know why, but we look so much more beautiful than normal. A friend of mine, after she became religious and started dressing modestly, said that she got together for coffee with her old boyfriend. And he said, wow, you look more beautiful than ever. And she said, like, this is a guy who's seen me and not very much. And he's telling me now that I'm dressing more modestly, I look more beautiful than ever. It's a different kind of beauty. It's a deeper kind, not a cheap kind, but a quality kind of beauty. I have to tell you something that unfortunately some people outside of the religious world see us as hypocrites. And they call us on it. Did any of you see National Geographic a few years ago? And if you know who I'm talking about, who they did this article on, please don't say it because it would be Lashon Hara. But they did a feature article on a group of ultra-Orthodox Jews living somewhere in America. And they sent in a female photographer to photograph the women. And at the end of the article, the end of the magazine, they interviewed her. And she said, you know, they told me to dress modestly out of respect for these ultra-Orthodox Jewish women. So I put on these really baggy jeans and a really loose-fitting short-sleeve t-shirt. So I thought, what does modesty mean? It means not showing off your body. And I went in there dressed like that. But apparently, we must define modestly differently because they were all wearing tight skirts. Ouch. And you know what happened to me? I got an Arab taxi driver one day. He says, where do you want to go to? I say, Harnof, across from the school called Neve Yerushalayim. He goes, wasn't that a school for girls? I said, yes, a school for girls who weren't brought up religious, who want to learn about Judaism. And just because I'm curious, I say to him, are there any schools like that in the Islamic world for Muslim girls who want to learn about Islam? Big mistake. Because it turns out that this Arab taxi driver is like a flaming Baal Tshuva, like born-again Muslim. And he's so into having found truth that he's out to convert the world. And when he heard me ask, are there any schools where a girl can go to learn about Islam? He thought I was interested. And so he launches into this whole, his eyes light up in the rearview mirror, and he launches into this whole sermon about the truth of Islam. And Islam is, you know, can't you just see the writing on the wall? It's so true, and Muhammad is the only true prophet, and you have to believe. And he's going on and on and on. And I couldn't get a word in edgewise. I really, literally could not get a word in. Finally, he starts comparing Islam to this corrupt Western world that we live in. And he says, look at the way they treat old people out there. They stick in an old folks' home. We in this Islamic world, we revere the elderly. So I couldn't take it anymore, and I said, excuse me, but like, this is not a fashion statement. I'm an Orthodox Jewish woman, and we also, in the Orthodox Jewish world, revere the elderly. Then he says to me, well, what about materialism? Out there, people want to just have and have and have and buy and have. We don't live for things. We live to serve Allah. So I said, excuse me, but I'm an Orthodox Jew, and we also don't live for things. We live to serve Hashem. And then he says to me, well, what about modesty? Look at the way women are dressed out there. Don't they see the way men are looking at them? Don't they have any self-respect? My wife covers herself up from here, down to here, down to here, and it's all loose-fitting. And I'm about to cut in, and what am I about to say? I'm an Orthodox Jew, and in the Orthodox Jewish world, we too have modesty, right? And at that moment, what happens? Religious girls walking down the sidewalk, wearing a tight short skirt and an even tighter top, and this Arab taxi driver points to her and says, and don't give me any more garbage about your religious Jewish world. You call this religious? This is sometimes what non-Jews think of us. I've had to explain away things to my cousins, to my sisters. Oh, well, she has all that red lipstick and the red and the outline, the black, and the, she's like in process. She's still growing. But we have to look at ourselves, because sometimes, even though we conform to Jewish law, we don't have internal sneas. It's just a dress code to us. A dress code isn't sneas. Spiritual self-image. That's what I'm talking about. Okay, thank you all.